This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit crestviewhutch.org.
Undoubtedly, you recognize the importance of saying thank you, of being grateful, and even acknowledging the blessings that exist in your life. Even people that don't have any practice of faith see that practicing gratitude can lead to improved health, greater happiness, career advancement, and even accomplishing your goals. So one of those thinkers, Michael Hyatt, he suggested that those who struggle to have gratitude should consider the George Bailey fix, which of course gets us into the Christmas movie that many of you love called It's a Wonderful Life, the George Bailey fix. Here's what he means by that. In the film, a guardian angel shows George what the world would be like had he never been born. It shows us how much easier it is to notice our blessings when we imagine their absence. So take a moment to imagine what life would be like without your spouse, without your job, without your home, any blessing that it's tough to be thankful for. And that's a great fix for us, right? It's such good advice. And that's like not necessarily like somebody opening up the Bible and explaining it. That's just like people that work in the business world saying that best practices for business world is gratitude. And if you're struggling with that, here's what you can step into. And sometimes there's difficulty in being grateful. Now, we're coming off a couple of weeks as a church where we've thought about mental health. We thought about how we can help eliminate the stigma around the issue by walking in the light with one another. That's where the series began. So it's kind of like the light and the darkness. We walk in the light with one another. That was 1 John 1. And then last week we saw how God gives us confidence in the darkness, so that whether we're facing mental health challenges or just walking alongside someone who has them, we can be of help. We can be helped by our faith. And we looked at Psalm 43 for that. And there's a connection there because right on the heels of that, in the Psalms comes this refrain, which John got to in our call to worship, where the Psalms are always like engaging our souls, engaging our hearts, and calling us to thanksgiving. So one writer suggested that the Bible encourages us to be grateful to God, even when we don't feel like it. So sometimes here's the quote, sometimes God feels distant or silent. And when this happens in my life, the full emotions of joy, empathy, grief, or anger seem to level out to monotony, routine, and boredom. If God seems distant, the desire to praise him and give thanks for the routine just isn't as exciting as the other seasons when things are good, life is full, and joy is easy. Yet again, the Bible shows us thanksgiving as a response to God, even when he's silent, even when we don't feel like it. This sacrifice of thanksgiving, and it is a sacrifice, mustering up the habit of praise if your heart isn't in it, drags you step by step back into the presence of the Lord. So there's the spiritual component. The business world is saying this is a great advice for you, and now there's like this spiritual component that even when you don't feel like it, even when life overwhelms you, that gratitude or thankfulness to God can help lift our spirits. Even the realities of the gospel itself inform our gratitude. So a work that I love to work through consistently is Milton Vincent's famous work called The Gospel Primer. And here's what he says. The gospel reminds me first that what I deserve from God is a full cup churning with the torrents of his wrath. This cup would be mine to drink if I were given what I deserve each day. And with this understanding in mind, I can see that to be handed an empty cup from God would be cause enough for infinite gratitude. If there were merely the tiniest drop of blessing contained in that otherwise empty cup, I should be blown away by the unbelievable kindness of God toward me. That God has given me a cup that is full of every spiritual blessing in Christ, and this, without the slightest admixture of wrath, leaves me truly dumbfounded with inexpressible joy. As for my specific earthly circumstances of plenty or what want, I can see them always as infinite improvements on the hell I deserve. That's such great good thinking, isn't it? To think through that the gospel itself is kind of tuning our hearts to the notes of gratitude. So recognizing all that reality by way of introduction, I want to kind of go after your heart this morning. Why are you grateful? What is firing your gratefulness to God? How is gratitude a part of your life? So I love that this is the rhythm in our world, like under God's common grace, that we get to experience a holiday like Thanksgiving. And yes, of course, I'm hoping the Cowboys lose not only today and Thursday. But no, Thanksgiving, like we get a season every year where the rhythm is, you know, man, our hearts need oriented to be thankful to God for what he's done. By the way, I do know there are Cowboy fans in here, so I'm not taking aim at you personally. There's just a big game today. So we get this time every year to kindle our hearts around this theme. And today, as we've gathered here, no matter what your spiritual background is, I want you just to think about God and what he's done for you. I want you to think about the realities of that. I want you to look to him and see if you can't find some reason to express praise to God, which could manifest in gratitude to him or in thanksgiving. And that's where we're headed today. So my simple outline, just 2 points today. I invite you to join me as we see two diagnostic questions toward a heart of gratitude. Two diagnostic questions toward a heart of gratitude. I'm hoping you believe that a heart of gratitude is going to benefit you. So whether you're in the business world, whether you're just thinking it's best practice, whether you know the gospel and know this is to be true, that gratitude is to be a part of your life. So I want to do some diagnosis around that heart of gratitude that you need to have. And that's where we're going to come in Luke 18, verses 9 through 14. So follow along with me as I read this parable. Let's read this together. This is Jesus speaking, and we're told in verse 9, he also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. So this is God's word. Thanks be to God. Two diagnostic questions toward a heart of gratitude. So just two simple things, then we're done. And the first diagnostic question makes the issue clear. Is my gratitude to God about me? Is my gratitude to God about me? We see this in verses 9 to 12. So we're jumping into Luke's gospel. We haven't been in Luke's gospel in a while. Luke told us at the outset of the book, if you wondered, like, what's this gospel about? Luke was writing to give readers like us an ordered account of all that Jesus said and did so that we would have certainty around what we've heard and what we've believed. So he's kind of giving us firm footing. And we know that this is the right scent, right? Even as we read this passage today, we know, oh man, this does feel very real to me, that Jesus would be going after people who trust in themselves. He would be going after the big shots of this world, right? So it's the right scent. We're given firm footing about what Jesus, what we've heard and believed. And in chapter 18 in particular, Jesus has just given his hearers, so if you look to verses 1 to 8, there was a parable that Jesus gave there of a persistent widow, which he was trying to teach his followers that they ought to pray and not lose heart. So don't give up. Prayer is going to be difficult work, and it's going to require not losing heart. So he's just given that parable. Now in this parable, verse 9 tells us that we're told Jesus told this parable to those who trusted in themselves, that they were righteous, and they looked with others, or treated others with contempt. They looked on others with contempt, and they treated others with contempt. So, I mean, I think just right here at the outset, what you believe finds its reality in how it manifests itself towards others, right? So there were some people who believed they were a certain way, and the result was they treated others a certain way. And I think that's always going to be a timeless truth. What we believe should affect the way we treat others. What you believe and how that relates to others is telling something profound. It's showing that. It's showing what's really going on. It shows where the foundation of your trust lies. We could even say that this parable is about those who thought they were grateful, trusting in themselves. So right out of the gate, we're told of two people who are going up to pray in the temple. I mean, simple enough, right? They're going to pray. And the scene shifts, first of all, to the religious one. People like you and me who have maybe been at this for a while, and we might come in thinking we're pretty impressive because we showed up this morning. And we're told that there was a Pharisee who was standing by himself. We don't know what's going on with him standing by himself, but it's possibly the case, based on why Jesus is telling us this parable, that he didn't really want to associate with those kinds of people. And so he prayed this way: God, I thank you. So this is where I think the whole sermon is kind of exposing our hearts of gratitude, right? This notion of a heart being challenged towards gratitude. He actually says this in a prayer: God, I thank you. And what he was grateful for revealed something that was going on in his heart, right? And the point of this sermon is kind of after the same thing. What you're thankful for shows a lot about what your heart treasures or what your heart values. We're told in Hebrews that God's word exposes the thoughts and the intentions of the heart. And here we're seeing that the heart's expressions of gratitude tell a lot about the reality of what's going on inside of our hearts. So what is this Pharisee thankful for? What is this religious person going up to the temple to pray, standing by himself? What is he praying for? Well, he's thankful, right? He's thankful to God that he's better than others. He's not like other men. He's not an extortioner. He's not unjust. He's not an adulterer. He's not even like this tax collector. So get that? He's grateful that he's better than other wicked people. Now, I think I've said this the last few weeks. I've been around religious people most all my life, and I've been around religious people enough to know that this isn't just some one-off experience. Like, most of us that have been around religious people a lot aren't reading this and going, nobody thinks that way. We're all reading this going, ouch. Man, I think that way. So, I mean, I think just saying that at the outset. Now, here's the deal: what we do in the church, especially those of us who have been at this for a while, there's no way we would remotely approach the language that this Pharisee's using, because we know the super intense Bible sniffers would sniff out our scent really quick. Like if we said something like, yeah, I'm just thankful that I'm so much better than this person. Everybody would be like, nope. Leviticus 18, 9 and 10 says you can't do that. And so we cloud it in other ways, right? We try to be really careful. And how it's reflected is the disdain with which we look down our noses towards others. It's showing so much. We're looking down and kind of from our lofty perches, and we're thinking in our minds and hearts, I'm better than them. I'm better than they are. So who's that in your heart? It might be that you say, I thank God I'm not like my children. Thank God I'm not like my grandchildren. I thank God I'm not like that person at Walmart. In fact, I don't even like to go to Walmart because of those kinds of people. I'm thankful that I don't have to deal with certain kinds of people. I'm grateful that I don't have any problems that are serious to deal with. I'm grateful that I don't have serious sins that I'm struggling with like that person does. I'm thankful that I have a biblical sexual ethic, not like some people. We just have to be careful that our gratitude before God isn't rooted in how we measure up in our minds compared to others. It's easy to be thankful for how we're better than others. But the passage even goes deeper. Like some of you are like, no more, please. The passage goes deeper. The Pharisee is not only thankful for how he's better than others, he's also thankful for what he does. So look at that. In verse 12, I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. I buy extra canned goods and give those to the poor. You know, I hand out money to people that are asking for it on the corner. I thank God that I do that. So I think part of the challenge here of what's happening in this Pharisee's heart is that he shouldn't be an extortioner, right? He shouldn't be unjust. He shouldn't be an adulterer. And he even shouldn't be taking advantage of people like a tax collector might. And in this point, right, in what he does, he should fast. Like, fasting isn't some optional thing. Jesus said that my disciples will be characterized by this. So, my people, when they fast, here's what they do. You know, this is what Jesus has said. The biblical principle is to be generous, to give out of what we get. I mean, that's a biblical principle. So it's not wrong that he's giving or fasting, or it's not wrong that he's, you know, it's not saying the passage, I don't think Jesus is trying to tell us, like, so you should be an extortioner. So you should be like a tax collector. No, that's not what the point is, right? What's going on is this Pharisee has these things, how he's better than others or what he's done, have turned into a standing before God that he's relying on to be impressive. So he's putting confidence in that. God, I thank you that this is my standing. So I thank God that I read my Bible every day. I thank God that I've memorized these passages. I thank God that I go to this particular church. I thank God that I pray daily. We can thank God for all kinds of religious practice as if we're impressing him, right? That's the motive of our heart. And like God in the heavens, you know, he's just laughing like, oh, really? You've read the Bible, huh? You know, I wrote that, right? You know, like, really? That's supposed to impress me? You pray to me? Okay. So the question returns, though, is my gratitude to God really about me? I mean, that's the question. That's what this Pharisee is exposing. Everything that he's saying, I thank God I'm not like this. It's exposing a heart that is turning on itself. And it's exalting myself at the expense of others. It's exalting what I do at the expense of other things. So that my gratitude to God is really, man, I'm so glad I'm better than those people who are burning down cities right now. I'm so glad that I'm better than these people that vote a certain way. I'm so glad that all these things are true in our hearts. And we have to be careful lest our gratitude to God be all about us. So that's the first diagnostic question, and it's serious, isn't it, right? Is most of your gratitude to God about how you stand compared to others? Is most of your gratitude to God about impressing God with what you do? So really dig into your heart here. I mean, I've worded the point as heart diagnostic questions for a reason. I want you to think about your heart. God, is this really what I'm grateful for? Is this really the spring in my step that I'm putting my feet on my solid work I stand, all other ground is sinking sand? Is that what you're putting your hope in? Is this really about you? So that's the first diagnostic question. Secondly, finally, we get a good corrective and a second diagnostic question, and it's, is my gratitude to God about him, right? I mean, that's the contrast, right? Is my gratitude to God really about me, or is it about him? And here's what we see fleshed out in verses 13 and 14. So let me just read these again. Luke 18, verses 13 and 14. The tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. So now we get to down to the grassroots level, right? We've been able to eavesdrop on the prayer of this Pharisee and all that's swirling around him. And now in contrast, we get to eavesdrop into this tax collector's life. And in verse 13, look at how he's described. He's standing far off. So the Pharisee was kind of standing far off too. And I wondered, you know, is that because he just doesn't want to associate with people? Now this tax collector is standing far off. We might wonder, is this because he just doesn't even feel welcome there? That this is not where I belong. Like, this is not, I don't feel close yet. I feel distant. He's not lifting his eyes to heaven, but he's beating his chest. I mean, look at the contrast there. The Pharisee, lifting his eyes to heaven, but kind of having appear out of the corner of his eye, thank God I'm not like this tax collector that's way off over there. Now we have this guy standing far off, just beating his chest. And his confession is, God, be merciful to me. Be merciful to me. Where does he get language like that? Why does he grab that? Well, it's echoing Psalm 51, right? Psalm 51:1, Psalm 51:3. After the notorious killing of Uriah and the sin with Bathsheba, David penned this prayer of confession to God, and it begins with, have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion, blot out my transgressions, for my sin is ever before me. You know, this is the reality that the tax collector is bringing. This is where that sinner feels at home. God, be merciful to me. So just like David had could not in that moment say, well, I'm so much better than all these others, or he couldn't say, look at all that I've done and I can stand on. This tax collector, he can't compare himself to others. He can't put confidence in his track record of goodness. He just comes to God and he's begging him for mercy. This fall, our adult Sunday school class dug deep into God's heart of mercy and compassion for sinners and sufferers. And what we saw there over and over again is that God is so ready to dispense mercy to anyone who will admit their need. That we just have to come to him and say, God, be merciful to me. And God's not going, oh, you're going to have to do better than that. You're going to have to string it together in better words than that. No, God is ready to dispense mercy. He's ready to come with compassion right in that moment. If you need mercy, just admit it. God, be merciful to me. And God's going to come through. He's going to deliver. And what this tax collector brings to the table is the reality that he's a sinner. So he says, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. So he's admitting that his recognition is that God has standards that he has not lived up to. That God has called him to way more than what he's measuring up to. So theologians kind of break this into two categories, that we're not just sinners by omission. That means like we're not doing what we know we should do. That's what a sin of omission means. But we're sinners of commission. Like we've actually done the things that we know aren't right. So saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner, is confessing like, God, there's a lot of stuff that I could still live to do for you that I haven't done. And I'm a sinner. And there's a lot of stuff that I've done that was wrong, that is sin. I need your mercy. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. So he's not trying to cover up or deny that he's a sinner. He owns it. He's admitting the reality. I don't know how many of you drive, but you all have cars, and you have those rearview mirrors on your passenger side window that have that message on it, and we all know what that message says, right? Objects in this mirror are closer than they appear. And your sin is way closer than it appears. That's the reality for all of our lives. It's there, right at the door, ready to pounce. We are sinners. We're more sinful than we even know ourselves, right? It's way easier to almost see the sin in others than it is to see it in our own hearts at times. And this guy has this tax collector is owning that. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. So your heart can easily bend towards itself. It can easily turn into like how this Pharisee prayed. It can do that so quickly, but the tax collector just models a simple approach. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He's banking on God to come through in this reality. God, you have to do this. You have to give mercy. And as a result, Jesus assures us, this is an amazing ending. Jesus assures us that it was this needy tax collector who went to his house justified, right? Verse 14, Jesus says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified. And making sure we don't miss the obvious point, Jesus adds, rather than the other, right? So he's not like saying, oh, there's still kind of hope for those religious people that want to put confidence in themselves. He's saying, nope, you have to give up on all that kind of confidence. Never gonna make it that way. It's all Christ. So if your gratitude to God is based on your awesomeness, then there are spiritual consequences for that that might very well keep you from God. And so the encouragement for us today is just to repent. To repent, to turn from that, to turn from sin, and just come near to the merciful God of the Bible. If your gratitude to God is based on God's mercy coming after sinners, then you're going to have firm footing, right? You're going to be justified. You're going to go to your house justified. You'll be justified or declared righteous in God's sight when you admit that. And remember, that was the whole issue behind this parable, that there were some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous. Like, I'm not quite that sinful. So it's like that scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I'm not quite dead yet. Be careful if you watch the movie. So I want to give a caveat. Like, it's not a full endorsement by any means, but, I'm not quite dead yet. And that's the issue here with the righteous people, right? We're saying, well, I'm not quite that much of a sinner yet. You know, I'm not quite that sinful. We're still holding on to some part of us that we're putting confidence in. And it's maybe a position we have. It's maybe something we've done. It's maybe how, compared to others, we're a certain way. And Jesus is saying, it's not going to go well for you spiritually if that's where you're going to land. The people who come to me come needing my mercy. Like, they're owning their sin, right? They're not looking down on others, trusting in themselves, treating others with contempt. So game, set, and match to the King of Kings, right? He's got it. He's got our hearts nailed. And this story packs a wallop for us that our hearts are exposed before God. You have nothing from him that you have not received. There's nothing good in you. So bank on him for mercy. Bank on his goodness moving into the neighborhood and like having its way in your life so that his goodness can be seen in how he acts towards you. Is your gratitude to God really about him? I mean, that's the profound question. Is it really about him? So today I'm trying to tune your heart to that wavelength because I think we so easily make our gratitude to God about us. You know, well, I've had a pretty good week this week. Okay, so it's your awesomeness? No, it's God, thank you. I don't deserve anything good from you. And I'm here this week. I mean, how did you do that? You know, it's his mercy. It's his mercy. So is your gratitude to God about him? So in conclusion today, we've seen two diagnostic questions toward a heart of gratitude. Is my gratitude to God about me, or is my gratitude to God about him? So what we're seeing here is that our gratitude has profound spiritual consequences. So in Romans 1, when Paul is unfolding how the wrath of God is being revealed against all manner of unrighteousness in this world, we're told that part of the problem was that we did not honor God or give thanks to him. Right? That's part of the problem. Our gratitude is exposing something in our hearts. And this failure to give thanks to God is a telltale sign that we don't know him. And so today, Jesus has laid out the simple approach for us. We recognize our reality before God, that we're sinners who in no way have measured up to God's standards. And we also remember something about God's character, that he loves to give mercy to sinners freely, that he's just ready to dispense it. We don't have to earn his trust. We don't have to grease the skids to provoke his mercy. It naturally flows out of his heart. And so when these two things come together, you admit your sin and you admit that you need God's mercy, Jesus assures us that it will lead to our being justified. Jesus is saying that anybody who comes to me and just says, God, be merciful to me, a sinner, like, show me your goodness. I don't deserve it. I failed. I've not served you the way I should. If we will turn from our life and put our trust in him, then we'll be saved. Or another way that Jesus puts it is, whoever humbles himself will be exalted. So humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, that he might lift you up. I mean, it's so, I know you're probably sitting here thinking, it can't be that easy. There's no way it's that easy. And I'm telling you, with all the confidence that I can muster based on what Jesus is saying, it is that easy. You just have to say, I haven't measured up. God, there's so many things that you've called people in ways to live that I haven't lived up to. There's so many things that I should be doing that I'm not even doing. I don't measure up to any of those. But will you show me mercy and kindness? And if that's your heart, then Jesus is saying you'll be justified. If you will humble yourself, he will raise you up and exalt you. He will lift you up. He will save you. It's incredible. It's the best news of all. And the converse is also true, that if you exalt yourself, you're going to be humbled. There are countless biblical examples to which we could point. You think of like Nebuchadnezzar, you know, ripping his chest up and showing that big B on the cover of his chest. And is this not Babylon the Great that I have made with my strength? And then like a month later, he's eating grass like a cow out in the middle of the field. You know, you're like, wow, that guy, that's quite a trajectory. I mean, over and over again, those who exalt themselves will be humbled, right? Countless biblical examples. So don't fall into the trap of losing your place in this world before God, right? In light of his face, in light of his realities. Your worldly success isn't just based on your wicked, awesome business acumen. The reason you have success is not just because you work harder than other people, or that you have a privilege that others don't. Your success is indebted to a God in heaven who's given you brainwaves, right? He's allowed your brain to function. He's given you breath so that you didn't die this past week. He's given you wisdom to relate to this world accordingly. So yes, you may have a great work ethic, but where did that come from? Your parents? Where did theirs come from? I mean, ultimately, it's got to get back to God, right? That God's the one who's done this. God's the one who's given you breath. God's the one who's given you the brainwaves. God's the one who's given you the wisdom to function in society the way you did. So you can't go around beating your chest about how wicked awesome you are when all of us in this room know it's God, right? You can't do it. You exalt yourself in that way, you're going to be humbled. And I'm pleading with you, just give thanks to God for what he's done in your life. And yes, God has blessed many in this room with incredible things, with incredible mercies, incredible goodness and blessings. He's changed our hearts. And yes, we're not like the world. We're not like we used to be. We live differently. But that's not our boast. Christ is. Christ is the one who's accomplished all that change. God's goodness moved into our lives and changed everything. So I'm saying at the very least, you should be grateful to God for giving you breath, for giving you brainwaves, for giving you wisdom. But on top of that, God's mercy has flowed to so many of us through Jesus Christ, God's Son. Jesus is the one who embodied God's heart for sinners and sufferers. If we wanted to, what does God's mercy look like? We would just look to Jesus, right? I mean, mercy has a face, and it's Jesus. He embodied God's heart for sinners and sufferers. And it was, we came to him in our desperation, and he saved us, not because of any works that we did, but because of his mercy, right? He saved us. So, might we be the most grateful people in the world? Might we just, especially this Thanksgiving season, where all the world can lament about all this and that, might it be that this pocket of believers here in Hutchinson, this body of believers, that for us, we have no boast but Christ. There's nothing we're putting confidence in. We're not putting confidence in what we've done. We're not putting confidence in who we are. It's just God's mercy. He has shown us kindness that we didn't deserve. We've been given so much more than we deserve, and his goodness has wafted on us in wave after wave, and it's crashing into the shores of your life every day. And are we going to really respond by not being a grateful people? I mean, this is kind of the appeal of the sermon. Is your gratitude really about you or him? So let's test our hearts in this way. that we may be a people who glorify and enjoy him forever.